I'm not even wrestling the Big Show. This whole thing's a charade. My match is with the hippo float from the Macy's parade. So it's time to get a championship to match these custom knucks. Madison Square, chant it loud, baby. Big Show sucks.
Chris Benoit's 18-year odyssey has culminated by winning the world's heavyweight title at WrestleMania 20.
Eddie Guerrero, the WWE champion. But let's not forget the history of these two men. Eddie Guerrero, with a heartfelt embrace on his friend, Chris Benoit. These men have traveled the world over so many times, and they're both shedding tears of joy because Chris Benoit can say, I won the heavyweight championship of the world in Madison Square Garden.
And welcome in to WrestleMania Rewind, part of the Mackie and Judd podcast feed. Phil Mackie and Declan Goff, the resident wrestling nerds of this show. And also welcome to not only WrestleMania 20, but welcome to the end of Jim Ross's voice, apparently.
Yeah.
Good old JR was letting it sling there for about five straight years during the Attitude Era. And
which was funny, because last WrestleMania, Michael Cole's voice was basically shot by, yes, like, the second-to-last match, too. So I guess it's a theme when you go 4.5 hours.
Yep. When we start to get into the four-plus-hour WrestleManias, these guys weren't quite used to that long in the broadcast stanchion. So WrestleMania 20, March 14th, 2004. Madison Square Garden, 18,500 fans, and this marked the third time at Madison Square Garden for WrestleMania, WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 10, and WrestleMania 20. And the theme for this WrestleMania, first of all, it started with Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon was like kind of a baby face, like, hey, you know, you thank the crowd and everything, and it was "Where It All Begins Again" was the tagline for this to kick off another 10 years of the WWE. So so many things to get to. Let's just run down the card real quick here, and then we can kind of go back and touch on some themes. So this was the WrestleMania debut of John Cena, as you heard off the top, the Doctor of Thugonomics. He beat the Big Show for the United States Championship, his first major championship in the WWE. He got him up for the FU, too.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it the Attitude Adjustment?
At this time, it was the FU still. Yeah. So
okay. They were trying to be a little bit more PG later on. You had Booker T and Rob Van Dam over Dudley Boys, over Garrison Cade and Mark Jindrak, and La Resistance, Rene Dupree and Rob Conway. Some really obscure tag teams in here for the World Tag Team Championships. Christian over Jericho in a fun feud that revolved around Trish Stratus. You had Evolution, at least the three members of Evolution, not named Triple H, defeating the Rock and Sock Connection. That was the Rock's last WrestleMania match for years. Torrie Wilson and Sable over Miss Jackie and Stacey Keibler in a Playboy evening gown, basically a softcore match.
Yep.
So that was a thing. I mean, they were just like, I can't even describe it. Like, at one point, Stacey Keibler was like getting into the ring over the second rope and then like grinding the second rope and just
letting the camera with an interesting angle of how she was getting in. Yes.
Yeah. Chavo Guerrero over, this was a cruiserweight open match. Chavo Guerrero won it. We'll just say that.
I loved it.
Goldberg over Brock Lesnar. There's a lot of meat on that bone. Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty for the other tag championships, the WWE tag championships over the APA. This is kind of the end of the run for the APA. The Basham brothers and the world's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Victoria over Molly Holly for the WWE Women's Championship. Eddie Guerrero over Kurt Angle in an amazing match for the WWE Championship. Undertaker over Kane. And then Chris Benoit defeating Triple H and Shawn Michaels, the main event of this, for the World Heavyweight Championship. What stood out the most to you about WrestleMania 20?
This is just a phenomenal card up and down. I think the thing that stands up the most is the fact that you basically got two guys over, and this was their peak moment. So Benoit Guerrero, veterans in their own retrospect of the WCW, some troubled past. And it's hard to really now, I think, like evaluate and appreciate Chris Benoit just because of what happened and how he left this earth. And obviously, Eddie Guerrero passed away from a heart attack about a year and a half later after this, too.
Yeah.
So it's heartbreaking in two completely different senses. But basically, it was one of the rare WrestleManias you had two undercards who had never really been in the main event status get pushed over the top. And yeah. I think that's pretty unique because you really haven't. There was only one belt, too, so obviously there was only really one guy to get over. But now with the brand splits and two different major championships, you had two guys who had paid their dues tenfold that they put over, which was really cool to see because I don't think you really won't see this again at another WrestleMania, and you haven't seen it since. So that's what I really think is really cool about it.
So, all right, here's my hot take on this. All right, this is one of the four WrestleManias that I have never seen straight through until watching this back. I've seen parts of it. I've watched the main event before. But just watching this back, the thing that I think buzzkills this WrestleMania a little bit is that I think this main event should have been Shawn Michaels versus Triple H, or maybe the one the previous year. I think Triple H versus Shawn Michaels should have been a WrestleMania main event. Hmm. And they kind of did it here. They kind of made it about, like, this has been a year and a half feud between these two guys since Shawn Michaels came back. But really, it's like a 7-year, 8-year friendship and feud. And it's all culminating. And even, like, they put Chris Benoit through the table toward the end of the match outside the ring.
Yeah.
And then it was like, all right, now it's Shawn Michaels and Triple H. But it was Chris Benoit's moment. And, like, in retrospect, obviously, it's easy to say, yeah, Chris Benoit probably didn't need the moment.
Yeah.
And if you go back, it's funny, when you go back through WWE Network, they actually whitewash him from everything. Like, mm-hmm. he's not on any of the artwork for any of the pay-per-views. And then when you look at the descriptions of the pay-per-views, at least the thumbnail descriptions, it doesn't include his name.
Yeah.
It says, like, Triple H enters as the champion for triple threat match.
Yeah.
So they've done everything they can to whitewash him as much as possible from WWE history. And so knowing what we know, it even adds to my point. Like, I think Triple H versus Shawn Michaels should have been a main event at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But then watching the crowd reaction to Chris Benoit winning, it was clearly the right decision in the moment because the fans were salivating over an underdog or someone new. I think they had just seen so much of Triple H.
Yeah.
And Michaels by that point, and they had seen so much of The Undertaker and these top guys, and like to see, and even Kurt Angle, like Kurt Angle had just been like, he'd been around for 7 years at that point or whatever, 6 years. So there's what I think, and then there's what the fans obviously wanted, and so putting Benoit over at the end was the right decision just to get the pop.
And this is around the time I started to get back into wrestling. It was around middle of 2004, so it was after WrestleMania 20. It was right before Benoit dropped the title to Randy Orton at SummerSlam. So this was right around the era that I started getting back into it. And looking back at it, then I was always pumped because by the time when I put myself back into wrestling and I heard Chris Benoit was world heavyweight. I was like, Chris Benoit? Like from WCW? Like what has he done to get over?
Yeah.
Like what? I would never expect him to be winning a Royal Rumble, let alone then being the main event and winning the title at WrestleMania. I was shocked by that.
Can't cut a promo.
No, can't really cut a promo. He's a great submission guy. He had some problems, and that was for sure. No one thought they'd be that severe, I think. But I think it's easy to say, like you said, it's easy to say that, yeah, it should have just been Triple H and Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels basically thrusted himself into the match from the scripted side of signs the contract, so now I'm on the bill. But I do think it's a very cool moment to see Eddie and Chris Benoit together. If we can take away what Chris Benoit did, and I shouldn't say that we should just sweep it under the rug, because it shouldn't be, because what he did was one of the worst things I've ever heard. It's a very poignant moment, and even I got like a little teary-eyed watching them together embrace, because it is a significant moment, you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, everything that Jim Ross said is true. Like, he grinded his whole career. He was kind of not an afterthought, but just one of those workers that you would put in the middle of the card or the low end of the card, and just Mr. Reliable, and devoted his whole life. For some additional listening and viewing, there's a great series that Vice has produced. It's like, I don't know, there's probably 20 episodes now. The Dark Side of the Ring. And they do a two-part episode on Chris Benoit. Mm. And it's sad. It's dark, obviously. And the main theme was just how close him and Eddie Guerrero were, that they were just like obsessed with their work and ignored all things that they needed to take care of in their personal lives, and both died way too early for different reasons. I mean, Eddie Guerrero died like a year later.
Yeah.
Or maybe two years later, whatever it was.
It was about a year and a half later.
And then Chris Benoit, I think, was more like 07 or 08, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. So this was the peak. Like, that moment for both Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, it was their peak. They were both champions. On the Eddie Guerrero front, so I loved, like, his character was so great and underappreciated. The lie, cheat, steal, and it comes to fruition. He unlaces his boot, and Kurt Angle, it was a little clunky because Kurt Angle was trying to rip his boot off because he couldn't get the boot off, but put the ankle lock submission on. Oh, Eddie sneaks out the back door of his boot and then rolls Kurt Angle up or whatever, and he wins that way. But this was an amazing match. I don't know if it goes down as like one of the 10 best matches in WrestleMania history by any means, but like, it's a great match. Kurt Angle is back to being healthier than he was a year before because he had the surgery. And I went down an Eddie Guerrero rabbit hole after this on WWE Network. Have you ever seen, later on in 2004, I think it might have been just a couple months later, Judgment Day, when JBL emerges from this WrestleMania.
Yeah.
He goes from being Bradshaw as part of the Acolyte Protection Agency, and they morph him into this John Bradshaw Layfield, different haircut. He's the rich Republican. Yeah, I think he used to make appearances like on Fox Business and stuff.
I think the Mad Money Show, or
CNBC.
That?
Yeah,
yes, he used to come on that all the time.
Yeah, so you had like JBL giving financial advice to people during this era, and so they're trying to put JBL over, and they have a match at Judgment Day between Eddie Guerrero and JBL. Have you ever seen this match?
Yeah,
the bloodiest match in the history of wrestling.
Yes, it's
so
insane.
Gross.
It is pretty gross.
It's like so over the top that it kind of takes away from the match because it's like, geez, is he gonna die?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening? But I went down an Eddie Guerrero rabbit hole.
Awesome.
I just love his character.
I mean, yeah, Viva La Raza and all the stuff about it. It was awesome. Everyone wanted to be like Eddie. I mean, and Eddie, you know, was like this smaller guy, obviously extremely jacked. Like, the dude had muscles on his muscles. But I loved his style. And he was, I mean, I remembered him from WCW. And when the first wrestling SmackDown I threw myself into was the SmackDown after Great American Bash, and that's when JBL gets the title. So, like, my first SmackDown in, like, 4 or 5 years is JBL's first night as champion SmackDown. So, and which started, like, off a 10-month reign, and he was the longest and is the longest SmackDown champion, I think, in history. So this, to see the final kind of, like, piece of the backstory before I am now enthralled over the next 2 years, which I am in these next WrestleMania 21 and 22, It's interesting to see that backstory, and Eddie was, a humongous fan favorite and was definitely taken far too soon.
On the Benoit front, so he didn't carry the title that long. He carried it to SummerSlam, and you mentioned Randy Orton beats him at SummerSlam with an RKO out of nowhere.
Yeah, classic.
And you'll notice at the end, there's so much great follow-up watching during this era. At the end of SummerSlam, Evolution doesn't come out to celebrate with him. It was just Randy Orton in the ring crying by himself, and at one point, Chris Benoit walks up to him and sticks his hand out, and they shake hands.
Yeah, he says, be a man.
Yeah,
be a man. Yeah.
And shakes his hand. And that was kind of, Orton was kind of moving from like this cowardly bad guy to kind of turning into a good guy. And the next night on Monday Night Raw was the infamous Evolution comes out to celebrate. And yeah, Randy, this is great. And Batista puts Randy up on his shoulders, and Triple H is giving the thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah.
And then they turn on Randy Orton.
And I think, too, from what the other backstory is, like, they made a mistake giving Randy that opportunity, like that championship. Like, it wasn't even just like a quick transitional thing. Like, he wasn't ready for it, is what I have heard about in the Evolution background, is they tried to get Randy over, and they were too quick on it. Like, eventually, obviously, Randy Orton is now a 10-time champion. I think his shtick is pretty old, but they were a year or two premature of making him essentially the face of the company, and they abandoned it quick and basically handed the title back to Triple H a month later.
Yeah, which is crazy. Like, could they have played out the Evolution thing another year? It had already been going on for like a year and a half by that point.
Right.
So I don't know what else they could have done. You know, DX didn't last that long.
No, it really didn't.
DX, well, the second incarnation of DX, the Raw after WrestleMania 14, it was basically over like a year later, and then they kind of came back, and they've come back a couple times. But it's hard to keep factions alive for more than like 2 years.
Right.
Four Horsemen's been around off and on for a long time.
I mean, even the Shield with those guys, that was like an off and on 5-year thing too. Like one would leave, one they would break up, then they come back together. Like yeah. You're definitely right. Stables really only last a few years.
What did you think of Doctor of Thugonomics, John Cena? I actually think it's some of his best work. I almost think he peaked when he was like 25 years old as a Doctor of Thugonomics.
It's definitely like cringy, as in like this wankster white boy trying to come out here and rap. And like I'm trying to remember how I truly felt about it, because it's probably easy for me to say at 27, like, what is this jokester doing? I was probably all in on it. Like, as a 12-year-old, I probably thought it was the coolest thing. Here's this, like, random little white guy rapping. Like, I probably did really, in my deep heart of hearts, think it was great. The match is really good with Big Show, and him coming out and doing all those raps and stuff, it's impressive. You can tell he's going
to
be a face
quick. I'm not even wrestling the Big Show. This whole thing's a charade. My match is with the hippo float from the Macy's parade.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
He called Big Show a hippo at the Macy's
parade. And yeah, he gets into some really good iconic matches here. And obviously by next year, he wins the WWE Championship. But this is the slow build, and you could see it just coming to fruition really quickly.
Yeah, he was hot. There's just a great behind-the-scenes story of him. He came out, it was sometime in 2002, probably a year and a half beforehand. Or maybe 2 years beforehand, and he came out as
It was the Kurt Angle Invitational thing, I think is what it was. He did like the
Ruthless
open
Aggression was his.
Yep. Yeah, Ruthless Aggression, yeah.
Yep. And he came out of the gate hot with his Ruthless Aggression thing, but there just wasn't really a character behind it. And so this was him developing a character for the first time, and then he kind of evolved it into like, I guess it would be like the cartoonish superhero John Cena.
Yeah.
A couple years later, so he was no longer doing the rapping thing. He would just wear like bright t-shirts and jorts and he loved the military and stuff. And that played well in the moment. And my beef with John Cena was always like, he literally still dresses the same way that he did as a character 13, 14 years ago.
Right.
And he's in his 40s and he's got longer hair now, and he's just very much still the same guy.
Yeah, I don't know who told him like this evolution of like let's give you a dad haircut. Like, what are we doing? Like, I understand to flip it up, but like, you look worse. Like, look worse. I don't know who told you to do that.
The dad haircut.
The dad haircut. It's total dad.
For your like C-level movies, he's basically become Diet The Rock Johnson.
He is totally the Diet Rock. Yeah. That's exactly what he
is. Which is funny because he made fun of The Rock, and we'll get into, as we make our way through the WrestleManias, we will get to eventually the late 20s where they had their back-to-back matches at WrestleMania, but he spent years dissing The Rock because The Rock abandoned wrestling for Hollywood. Yeah. And now John Cena is literally trying to do the exact same thing the last 3 years, but with far less success.
Far less success. And like, maybe I think Cena thought that, like, because we've talked about before, like, The Rock's peak was really only like 4 or 5 years. He was involved before then. Like, he was in WWF for basically a decade before he truly left. But John was around for a little longer too, and I think maybe that's where the beef is. But John was definitely biting off more than he could chew. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to play a couple more sound bites here. I forgot to play I just love playing these sound bites. So this is Eddie Guerrero winning from what we just talked about.
Tap out. Just tap out. And just like a lock. Just tap it. Wait a minute. The boom was flying. Foot came off. Look at this.
I love it. Michael Cole wasn't as bad. I feel like Michael Cole, I don't know, I've just gotten sick of Michael Cole over 20 years.
I think, again, it's another one. His just style hasn't, as years have gone on, it's gotten stale. It's just, and that's hard. As a broadcaster, it's hard to read, you know, as I've ripped Dick Bramer before, like, it's hard to really own that craft like that. And at the time, though, I will say, yes, he was very good. And him and Taz, I mean, Taz has his moments, too, where it's like, Taz, what the hell did you just say? That kind of a doof. But they played off really well for each other for those first couple years.
I actually think Taz is kind of one of the great what-if stories. If he hadn't broken his neck and hadn't gotten knocked out of wrestling, I think he was primed to be a huge star in the early 2000s.
He was probably, I don't know it well enough, so maybe I'm speaking out of context, but like, he was probably on a Mount Rushmore of ECW. I mean, he might be the fourth member, but he was one of the stables in ECW.
His entrance music and his gimmick of the human suplex machine, just this unstoppable force, I love it.
Yeah.
And I don't mind him as an announcer either. Okay, other things here. The Rock comes back. The Rock was on a hiatus basically from, I want to say, SummerSlam up until the run-up to this WrestleMania.
That's right.
And this was his last WrestleMania for a good 7 years or so.
Because Mick Foley, The Rock, hasn't said this in a long time, but finally, The Rock has come back to New York City! You see, Mick Foley, it's our night. It's our night. Let's go out there and electrify as only you and The Rock can. Let's go out there, slap the lips off those Evolution sons of bitches, whoop their candy asses. If you're some male, what The Rock and Sock is cooking.
Socko is where it all begins again. Oh, look out, Randy. And oh, Randy Orton, the RKO. Get him out of nowhere. Get him out of nowhere. Evolution wins it.
Classic RKO. Classic RKO.
The RKO out of nowhere. There's been some great RKOs out of nowhere over the years, man.
There's a whole, I've gone on YouTube rabbit holes like twice a year. I go top 10 RKOs and I'll just go all the way down them.
I think my favorite, if I remember, he fought, was it for the Intercontinental Championship? He fought Seth Rollins, I want to say, like 5 years ago at a WrestleMania early on. It might have been the first match on the card. And it was when Seth first had developed the curb stomp.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, Seth went for the, so Randy Orton's on all fours, and Seth goes for the curb stomp. So he comes up in the air, and he puts his foot on Randy's head, and Randy gets up. And so it looks like he's going to give him the curb stomp, and on the way up, Randy Orton gets up mid-curb stomp and just reverses it into an RKO out of nowhere. Probably my favorite of all time.
I think the two that stand out the most are Shannon Moore. If you know who that one is,
yeah.
Shannon Moore goes for the shooting star press.
That's right,
when
dude.
When Randy's the ground and comes up like, I'm How sure they practiced that? That, but I don't think you could hit that any more perfect. That one was awesome. And then next year at WrestleMania 21, when it's Orton versus Taker, I don't know if you've seen that before, but that's another one where I think he goes for a last ride or a choke slam, and Randy reverses it and RKOs Undertaker completely out of nowhere, and you think he's going to win. It is a pretty fascinating finisher. I love it.
Yeah.
It's like the Stone Cold Stunner for us. It really is.
So this was Evolution was still sort of riding the wave a little bit here, and this is before the full peak of Randy Orton. So they in a handicap match beat Mick Foley and The Rock. Mick Foley also then, I want to say, was it the next pay-per-view? He wrestled Randy Orton in some kind of a hardcore match where Randy Orton wound up taking a shirtless bump on the thumbtacks.
Yes.
But still won the match.
Correct.
But it was the famous, like, he was, like, convulsing and bleeding and blood
so
running down his back.
Yeah, you could tell, like, there's thumbtacks all over him. Ugh.
We also get, like, this is Mick Foley coming back. He was basically there to put Randy Orton over and then to put Edge over the next year. Because I think it was WrestleMania 21 where Mick takes the bump through the flaming table against Edge in a hardcore match.
That's correct.
So that's going to be awesome. Maybe that was WrestleMania 22.
I think it's 22 because 21, he's in the Money in the Bank. But yes, it that does start a new feud for him.
All right, let's get to Goldberg against Brock Lesnar. So this is what happened.
Lesnar and Goldberg somewhat hesitant to lock up, neither wanting to step to the center, or neither have at least yet. Sellout crowd.
So you had, this is the internet era now, it's 2004, and so dirt sheets get leaked out. Pretty much everyone had the internet by 2004. Dirt sheets were still in play in the 90s and the 80s, but it was mostly like dark corners of wrestling crowds. And so word had leaked out that Goldberg's contract was ending at WrestleMania, that it was a one-year contract, and word had leaked out that Brock Lesnar was going to go make his attempt to play in the NFL. And obviously we in Minnesota watched that whole thing play out in the summertime, and he was more interested in fighting opposing players than he was like actually getting good at football. But the crowd knew that these guys were both gone, and these guys are both just like, they're mad at the crowd reaction.
Yeah.
They're egotistical, and so they just circled around for like 8 minutes to start this match, and Stone Cold the guest referee. Yeah. So it winds up that Stone Cold just stuns the crap out of everybody, and he's the one that goes over at the end, basically. But what did you think of this match, if you want to call it a match?
Yeah, I mean, they basically just packed it in. You could tell it was an awkward situation, knowing that Brock was basically leaving at his, not even really getting to his true peak in the middle of it, 2 years into his tenure, and he's going to go play football. Goldberg, again, I think, like, I want to say that they, again, misused Goldberg because of how dominant he was in WCW, but I also think maybe the better way to look at it is that Goldberg just got, again, when we talk about guys getting stale, it didn't work. It did not work. And they do this every other year. Even currently, they'll bring back Goldberg for a random little title run where he beats someone in 90 seconds. And it's just like
that match against the, first of all, Goldberg cannot physically wrestle for more than 3 minutes now. He gets blown up.
Yeah. And he almost killed The Undertaker.
I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
When he first came back, it was kind of cool. Like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And he winds up beating Brock Lesnar. And so that was kind of cool. But like every time they dust him off now, it's like, all right,
it's not good.
Be done with it.
But yeah, you can tell the match is pretty clunky. And if this was a non-sanctioned special referee, so if it was just a normal referee, I don't think this match would have gone over very well at all. So like you needed Stone Cold. Because even when Goldberg hits his finisher and pins him 1-2-3, Goldberg's up on the turnbuckle drinking beer and everyone's just booing him. Like everyone's just like, dude, get out of here. Like we all know everyone knew that Stone Cold was going to stunner him too. Like it was just inevitable and you needed that. And I think it was more the theatrics and just like, hey, here's our these two guys that are essentially failed products by us. And we're going to let the fans turn on them.
Yeah. The only guy that I would really like to see, I think we've brought everyone back that needs to be brought back at this point from that general era of wrestling. I don't need to see Shawn Michaels wrestle again. I know he came back for the Saudi Arabia thing a couple of years ago. Like, I don't need to see him again.
No.
The one guy, and this is a couple years after this period when this guy became popular, I would mark out to see CM Punk come down a ramp.
Oh, yeah.
Either AEW or WWE. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like AEW is the better fit there for him, but the bigger moment would be WWE.
Yes.
If he came back and wrestled Triple H or something, could you imagine? And they play that thing out.
Even like Roman Reigns, even someone current, I think it could definitely work.
Yes. And he kind of teased it when he came back for the debut of WWE on Fox, SmackDown on Fox. He came back as part of the Fox analyst crew on like Wednesday nights or something.
Right.
Okay, a couple other things to get to here. Shawn Michaels is emerging in this match was excellent.
Oh, that's great.
But Shawn Michaels kind of overshadowed by the Chris Benoit story and Triple H being champion and basically the face of the company. So Michaels was kind of like the third guy in that match. But this opens the door for the resurrection of Shawn Michaels, Mr. WrestleMania, Mr. Showstopper. And you get a run now of Shawn Michaels WrestleMania matches. You already had the Jericho one from the year before. Triple threat match for the title here. You get the Kurt Angle one coming up, which I still have never seen in its entirety.
Oh, God. I have goosebumps so excited right now.
The one that gives me goosebumps is the match against The Undertaker.
The first one?
Yes.
The first
They're
one,
both
yeah.
excellent.
They're both
but
great.
The first one is maybe the greatest match in the history of wrestling.
It might be, yeah.
And he just goes on this run. He also wrestled John Cena for the title at a main event in 2006 or something.
Yep.
So so you had just kind of gotten back into wrestling as Shawn Michaels was just getting back into being Mr. Showstopper.
Right. This was fun as hell because I loved Shawn Michaels as a kid and to see him come back in this match because I think even at the time I was thinking like, what is he doing? Like he's the third guy. He's had this run with Triple H for a year and a half and like he came up successful once in the Elimination Chamber, but outside of that, Triple H has had his number. Like what are they going to do with Shawn Michaels? Like what's the point? And it turns out like he literally makes this match why it's so great. Like he really, really does. The chin music that he gives to...
Here. The left hand here. Oh! Sweet chin music on Benoit. Michaels almost beheaded the Wolverine. Benoit's down. The champion is down. Michaels is crawling.
Who does he want to cover? He covered Benoit.
Cover is over. No! It's not over. Michaels and Triple H still looking at each other in the eye.
You gotta be kidding me.
Michaels and Triple H didn't say a word.
Dude, okay, Jim Ross is so ridiculously good. Who thinks in that moment where they're about to put Chris Benoit through a table, who thinks to call it not like based on what's going to happen, but based on they haven't said a word. They just looked at each other in the eye and they knew what to do, right? Like, he's so good.
He's super good. And there's even a moment, too, where Benoit's in the crossface and he's clearly about, and this is where him and Triple H work so damn well together, where like he's about to tap and then Triple H reaches and grabs his wrist. Like he's trying to tap and Triple H is preventing the hand from really slapping the mat to submit. And yeah, Michaels, even the moon, there's the moonsault early in the match where he takes out both of them. Like people can rip Shawn Michaels and stuff. And like, I don't understand why, just because like, oh, because he loses all these matches. It's not about the wins and losses. It's about the performance. Like, he goes on a run here where it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And he challenges the best of the best. And there's a reason why he's considered one of the best performers of all time.
Yeah. And study up if you're a young wrestler out there and you're randomly listening to this podcast, like just the storytelling and everything and the physical feats that these guys are pulling off. The other match we haven't really touched on is Undertaker versus Kane. It's the second time these guys, I think the second time they square off.
Yep.
The first one was at WrestleMania 14 in Boston. So the Undertaker had been some amalgamation of the American Badass or just like a less
not
Undertaker version. Yeah, not the he was. It had been like 5 years since he had been the Dead Man by this point, and. Paul Bear makes his return.
Dude, that pop of the crowd when he did the oh yes, like because everyone everyone knows he's coming back essentially as the Dead Man character, but I don't think anyone saw the Paul Bear part coming.
Yeah, that's great.
So like the fact he comes back and you get that pop from it, oh, it works so well. And I think a lot of people look at ABA Undertaker like, what was he doing there? Like, it's a forgotten part, and it's a lost part of his career. I like completely disagree. I thought it was awesome. I really did, especially like the last few years of it. Dead Man Walking, like I thought it was awesome the way he would come out to the ring and stuff, and he was this new character, and he touches on it too that like he needed something different.
I agree,
and that's why it's cool. I think with the AJ Styles match, the last match at WrestleMania, which was apparently his last match ever, that he incorporates all three phases of that, especially as ABA. He basically is dressed like ABA.
Yep, with the darker hair.
Yeah,
and got the motorcycle.
So he definitely still looks at it as like it was a positive part in my career.
And the story building up to this was the Undertaker was buried alive by Kane, the American Badass Undertaker, at Survivor Series.
Correct.
In November.
It was Undertaker versus Vince in a buried alive match after like Vince had been like tormenting Undertaker's life and career for the last match or for the last like few months leading into that. So then he disappears in November and then makes some sporadic, I believe it's Royal Rumble. He makes his like first kind of like ominous appearance and he messes with Kane at the Rumble to get him eliminated.
Yep. And Kane does a great job. He's just like, at the beginning of this match, he's like, no.
Yeah.
I buried you. I buried you.
I think this is like the best, I even wrote it down, like it's the best Undertaker promo, like the pre-match promo. I think it's the best of his Mania career run. And this entrance, I think, is by far his best entrance. Like the return and the ominous fact of the Dead Man. Yeah. I think it's his number one.
What's your general feeling about Kane? Because I feel like, so Kane, and then if you include the fact that he was Dr. Isaac Yankum, the dentist, and he was the other Diesel. He's been around for 25 or 30 years with the WWE. He's been around for, and he hasn't really been Kane recently because he's the mayor of Knox.
He's the mayor of like Tennessee somewhere.
So he was 20 years he was Kane. And he really only had like one or two short title runs.
Yep.
They essentially, you know, they brought him in as like this monster heel and then kind of killed him off in that he just got beat twice by the Undertaker at WrestleMania and then in the Inferno match, right?
Right.
So they kind of killed his like monster heel momentum within the first year of bringing him in. But then he had the longevity is there. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
He's not anywhere near the Mount Rushmore.
No.
People got sick of him multiple times, but he's always just kind of been there as a monster heel.
Yeah, he's definitely just a gimmick. Like, I look at him and Big Show in, like, the same retrospect of just like, all right, the now's always, but like, how are you going to beat him? How are you going to eliminate this guy? Like, well, he gets eliminated every year. And he gets beat every year. He, like, he doesn't have that
Mark Henry became that, too, at
exactly.
one point.
And that's where I kind of look at, like, the current women's division, like, with Nia Jax. Like, Nia Jax is clearly the most physically dominating person in the women's evolution.
Yeah.
But she's not over, and she's not really even, like, the top five women's wrestlers. Like, she's based, like, I always say, like, she reminds me of female Kane. Like, she's just, she's a force, and, like, at Royal Rumbles and and matches like in that style, she's going to look great and the crowd will love her, but she'll never be the crown jewel and like the face of the company.
Yeah, that's fair. Are we missing anything else before we get to the definitive Mania rankings here?
I think just a few other things. I actually really enjoyed the Cruiserweight Championship match. I love the Cruiserweight division at this time. Again, that was a short-lived thing that they adopted from WCW that Stephanie McMahon implemented. And you got to see even some of the WCW guys get like their little WWF moment. Obviously, like Ultimo Dragon, he was a huge Cruiserweight in there for a while. Rey Mysterio is the most notable one. But you had guys like obviously Funaki and Jamie Noble.
Jimmy Yang was in this one, yeah, as Akio.
And Billy Kidman is actually like one of my one of my favorite wrestlers too. And he has a nice little performance here with his Kidman bomb, and he did a great shooting star press. So actually I really enjoyed the Cruiserweight match. But yeah, I think it's a pretty dang good WrestleMania, man, from top to bottom.
The Playboy evening gown match is it's like the lowest point in terms of WWE's approach to how they featured women, right?
Totally.
And it sucks because between Sable and Trish Stratus was not in this match, neither was Lita, and they probably would have just said, screw you.
Yeah.
But they had some amazing talents that could absolutely hang with the talent that's out there today.
Even Victoria and Molly Holly, like same thing. Like they had the capabilities doing the same thing.
Yep. Molly Holly, by the way, from Minnesota.
That's right.
Shout out.
And then the last thing, too, I wrote down, too, was I remembered seeing that crossface, and me and my buddies and my brother used to put like that Crippler's crossface hurts like hell, dude. I've been put in so many and tapped out of so many Crippler crossfaces from wrestling with my buddies as a kid.
It is, it is Chris Benoit, man.
Like, yeah,
it feels uncomfortable talking about him, but you know, we're talking about the art that was WrestleMania 20, I guess. So, all right, definitive WrestleMania rankings here, 1 through 10 scoring system. You and I clearly leaning toward the end of the 90s and early 2000s here. So we have ranked them. WrestleMania 19 and 18 are tied for the best. The last two are the best ones we've watched. WrestleMania 17, 14, WrestleMania 10, 13, and 15 make up the top seven right now, followed by WrestleMania 6, WrestleMania 8, and WrestleMania 12. And some people might be thinking, like, well, where's WrestleMania 3? The main event is iconic. Steamboat Savage is iconic. Yeah. It's 2.5 hours of mostly stuff that doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a 9.5, man. It's almost, it's not completely a 10. I give this a 9.5. I think it's the best. I know we've gone best WrestleManias these last two. And a short tease, like 21 is my all time favorite, and I'm guessing it still holds up. So I give this a 9.5. I think it's a really, really good WrestleMania. It's just awkward because of the Benoit factor.
Yeah.
Like looking back on it. I completely understand why someone would then drop it down a few pegs because of that.
So I'm gonna pump your brakes a little because of the Benoit factor,
okay,
but only to an 8, which gives it a score of 8.75, which makes it the best WrestleMania that we have reviewed to this point.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's you had, in terms of, like, iconic moment, it's one of the most remembered endings to a WrestleMania with the confetti falling on a crying Chris Benoit. When you think of what are the WrestleMania, the end of WrestleManias that you remember, and I think Daniel Bryan.
Yep.
Hogan Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate Warrior over Hogan, Chris Benoit for sure. I think Stone Cold, too, going over for the first time.
Yeah, the Michaels and I think of that, too.
Boyhood Dream, Shawn Michaels,
right.
WrestleMania 12.
Yep.
And there's probably some other ones, too, that are in that mix. But, like, this is one of the most, memorable endings to a WrestleMania.
For sure.
That we're going to find. So, all right, that's a wrap on.
I can't wait for 21.
The greatest WrestleMania ever, apparently, to this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, just a quick preview of WrestleMania 21. I started watching this also last weekend. WrestleMania goes Hollywood.
Yep.
Staples Center, Los Angeles. This is the last WrestleMania that I did not watch. I was a wrestling fan from 1990 when I first remember watching it as a kid up until like 2000. So a good 10-year run through the beginning of the Attitude Era. And then I was out until SummerSlam 2005, because I remember the Michaels Hogan stuff from the summer of 2005.
Yep.
And then I was back in for the fall of 2005.
So this is the first WrestleMania I ever saw start to back live.
Okay.
So this was like, I remember going to my buddy's house, and I think it was like the end of spring break. So we had like the Monday off of school, or beginning of spring break. So we had the Monday off of school, and we pulled an all-nighter and watched this. It was awesome. It's my favorite WrestleMania by far.
Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels. They went almost a half hour, which is insane in this day and age. You had Batista, Triple H, John Cena versus JBL for the WWE Championship. You also had Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero in a singles match here. So all kinds of stuff. And the debut, maybe the biggest thing on this card, the WrestleMania debut of Chris Masters.
That's right. Yeah.
The Master Lock.
And the debut of the Money in the Bank ladder match. That starts at 21, yeah. too. So this is, I can't wait.
Taker Orton, the Legend Killer. All right. That's a wrap on this episode of WrestleMania Rewind.
By winning the world's heavyweight title at WrestleMania 20.